Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. You'll find all the TWiT shows on your Roku box, Android, and BlackBerry phones, and all Yahoo Widget TVs powered by MediaFly. For more information, visit twit.tv/MediaFly. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 71, recorded December 1st, 2010. Rel No Follow. This Week in Google is brought to you by Ford and voice-activated sync, featuring true hands-free calling, turn-by-turn directions, 911 assist, and more. Available exclusively on Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury vehicles. And by Gazelle, the easy way to sell or recycle the used gadgets lying around your home or office. Don't just sell it, Gazelle it. For a 5% bonus payment for your used gadgets, go to gazelle.com and use the bonus code TWIG. And by the Eco Imagination Challenge from GE. GE and its partners are awarding $200 million to ideas that help build the next generation power grid for the 21st century. For more information and to view and comment on ideas, go to ecoimagination.com/challenge. It's time for TWiG, This Week in Google, the show that covers Google, the cloud, and really kind of everything going on the internet. Joining us, as always, we're so glad to have Gina Trapani with her new hairdo and her new lights and her new job.
Me and my bangs.
Smarterware.org is the blog. And we'll talk about, well, it's not a new job, but full-time at the job, which is exciting. Good to have you here, Gina. Also with us, the pink and lovely, freshly bathed Jeff Jarvis.
Gina has a new hairdo. I have new skin.
We'll fix that.
Oh, that's scary.
We'll fix it in post. We'll fix it in post. We can make that better.
Jeez.
Well, the funny thing is if I set it for the wall being a crew, then you
screw the wall. Pay attention to me.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Really. Let's let the wall color. Nothing I can do with you.
Black and white or something.
Nothing I can do with you. You're hopeless, Jeff. You're hopeless. Oh. Is his monitor? What color would you like to be, Jeff? I'm getting the peanut gallery's giving me. Now he's blue.
It's not easy.
There's no. Unfortunately, there's no flesh color in there. There's no flesh tones. It's either pink or blue. You look like a Smurf.
Hey,
there.
Hey. Oh,
don't touch it. Don't touch it.
Human. Human color.
There's a human on the other side. I pushed a button. good to have you, Jeff. Buzzmachine.com. Oh, look, there he is. Matt Cutts in the lower left corner to block. Matt is an official Googler. He's in charge of blocking web spam on the Google search results.
What a smooth transition, Leo.
Woo!
You're the professional broadcaster.
Woo! And Matt is at mattcutts.com/blog if you want to read his blog. Actually, Google just blogged about the story of the week. We had a lot of fun with it on TWiT. The New York Times story that came out on Sunday about the guy who is really gaming Google by generating negative customer response.
Well, he said he was, but is it true, to start off with, Matt, that it doesn't matter how you spell a name, as long as you spell the name, gets you PageRank?
Let me just recap the story a little bit.
Yeah,
it's one of the best newspaper stories I've read in a long time. In fact, this was one of the things we talked about on TWiT on Sunday. Is this is the Dwight Silverman, who writes for the Houston Chronicle, said you get one of these every 5 years where you just go, this is going to be such a great story. The reporter goes to the guy's house in Brooklyn. He's got this Brooklyn accent, and he says, I don't care what they think. And he flips off his customers, and he yells at them, and he calls them names. He threatens to come to their house. He sells designer eyewear. Well, sells isn't probably the right word. He has a website purporting to sell designer eyewear, but in fact, it seems a lot of times you get something you didn't expect, you get overcharged. And he says, I don't care, because people go to get satisfaction. They complain about me, and my Google juice goes up. They talk about a particular one of his customers who bought her frames from him because he was the number one result when she entered in the frame name. Now, early on, Google said, well, yeah, but if you enter in the name of the company, we're not going to name the company. What should we use, Gina, as a euphemism for this company?
Ego, my eyes, is probably a good...
It's a bad Jackson Brown pun is what it is. Really bad. But anyway, apparently all the vituperation on Get Satisfaction is just more links, and Get Satisfaction is a highly rated blog, so it gets more links back to his website, and apparently Google interprets that as interest and ranks him highly. So there in a nutshell is the story from the New York Times, and it was a great read and it's well worth reading. Now, Google just posted a response today on the blog. Matt?
I can walk you through it, yeah. You know, it's really funny because the first thing we did in that blog post is we wanted to pop the misconception that it was all these complaints that were giving them a lot of benefit in the Google rankings, because that's not really what was happening. In fact, Get Satisfaction, Thor, the guy that you might know from Get Satisfaction, did a blog post, and we had linked to that. And he said, we used the no-follow attribute of all our hyperlinks.
So they weren't slowing PageRank. If you use in the link... After the URL, if you use REL equals no follow, Google takes that as an indication not to use that in its indexing.
Ranking. We dropped the link. Okay. Yeah, we don't use it in PageRank. We don't trust the anchor text. So it's a perfect way. It's actually almost 5 years old now. It's a very general mechanism to say, you know what? I don't endorse this link. And it turns out almost all of the consumer complaint sites either didn't link to the site or only used the text name or used rel nofollow. The ironic part is some of the most reputable links coming to the site were coming from Bloomberg and, wait for it,
the New York Times itself. Well, he even says... The guy who owns the company even says at the end, it's a great end to the, he says, hey, it's okay if you write them at me. Just make sure you include my URLs and names in the article. Say anything you want. So really all the attention he got from the press is what helped him.
Well, he was doing relatively well even before that. You know, his pet theory was that he was getting a lot of negative mentions. If he was doing well in the last month or two, it might be because Bloomberg wrote an article that mentioned that company was getting sued, and in the process, they linked to him. Now, one of the easy things you would think is, oh, well, just look for people who are really angry, the sentiment analysis. And it turns out that wouldn't have worked at all because the Bloomberg article was completely neutral. It just said, yeah, this company is suing this other company. So it was really more, you know, a few fashion blogs, a few mainstream news sources. It really wasn't the sort of hate from consumers that was giving it a lot of Google ranking.
Now, Jeff, you wrote in your blog, BuzzMachine.com, kind of taking off the title of your book, What Should Google Do About This? How should Google respond to this? Now, of course, this might change knowing now that it wasn't coming from Get Satisfaction.
Right, but there were a lot of people who said who blamed Google for this. And the first point, I think, is that we do live in a world of caveat emptor. And it is up to the consumer to figure out what's what. So that, you know, when I had my Dell problems, I kicked myself at the time for not searching on Dell sucks. And so I learned a big lesson there. And whenever I buy something from a new vendor online, I check it. And if you searched for the vendor's name, ego my eyes, it will say, you saw, as Matt had pointed out on Twitter, lots and lots and lots of negative stuff. You would have known to stay away from this guy if you just searched for the vendor's name.
But that isn't really the fault of a consumer.
Yeah, it is. Caveat emptor, sure it is. Is it Google's job to ferret out every bad guy on earth? Matt has enough time trying to play whack-a-mole with just the spamsters. If you also try to ferret out everybody who might be bad, that's not Google's job. It's an unscalable task. We don't necessarily want Google to do it because somebody else's bad store is somebody's good store. You know, it just doesn't work at all. And so then the next question is, as Matt said, do you look at sentiment analysis? Even apart from this question of the Bloomberg story, as somebody said on Twitter when this discussion was going underway, well, if they use sentiment analysis, they'd see a lot of negative links to Barack Obama. And what does that mean?
Right.
What do you do with
vaccines?
That?
vaccines.
Or should Bloomberg and the New York Times have used the rel nofollow attribute? I mean, if they're trying to be, if they're reporting a neutral story about one company suing another, I mean, I know that this is probably, you know, this is never going to happen. But I mean, if I'm making a recommendation on my site, then I'm not going to use the nofollow. But if Bloomberg is just writing this neutral story, I mean, would that have helped?
Doesn't that just build in sentiment analysis, though? I mean, don't you want, in most cases, not to use rel nofollow? Don't we want links?
Yeah, you do want links, and the web is very good at having links. I don't think that Bloomberg should necessarily have been responsible. We just wanted to sort of dispel the misconception that it was all people complaining on the consumer sites that was causing it.
Right.
But what was kind of interesting is, you know, to Jeff's point, if you just allow people who say, oh, this is bad, to hurt someone, then you can seriously impact their rankings. Then you have to worry about, you know, people who don't like vaccines, people who don't like either Barack Obama or Sarah Palin. And that sort of stuff could really have unintended consequences.
Google does not want to get in that business by any means.
No.
And that's what's called sentiment analysis. And that's not what does Google do any sentiment analysis?
We do, actually. We have a link in the blog post where we do sentiment analysis for news and for blogs. And there could be a place for that, but the main thing we wanted to get across is that just that alone wouldn't have done the job.
Right.
And
now,
in fact,
let me ask you something, because on Sunday I did a search for this. I tried to duplicate the search that the protagonist in the story, the woman who got ripped off by this company, did, and was not able to get a link to this company. Google delisted it?
I was lucky enough to have a front row seat, and what happened is the algorithmic change, and we made an algorithmic change, it affected several hundred sites, not just this one site, went live late last night.
Oh, interesting.
So if you weren't seeing it Sunday night, then that was something different. Maybe the site was down or
but
something.
But there has been a change since then.
Yeah, you know,
is
to
that
be
routine?
Able to,
does Google do that a lot?
Well, we do roll out over 400 changes a year. So we do average about one change or a little more than one change per day. To be able to get feedback and within a couple business days come up with some new algorithm that would improve the search results for that kind of experience, that is pretty quick. But, you know, we read through the article and we were just as horrified as everybody else. So.
That was a fun weekend for you guys.
That's amazing. More than one change per day is unbelievable. I mean, what is, as an engineer, I'm just like, what does their regression test look like? I mean, when you change the algorithm, you want to avoid like unintended consequences, changing other kinds of searches. It must be an insane test suite that you run before you roll out. Or how does that work? Is it sort of continual testing that just runs constantly as the changes roll out and tweaking? Or I'd love to know. We could dedicate a whole show to Google's search algorithm testing and deploy system. But
right. Well, and we do have continuous testing. So if something really happens to drop one important site or a high impact site, we sort of get pages about that. But whenever you want to roll out a new change, essentially we also, for example, for this change, we ran something like a couple hundred thousand queries to see how big of an impact that one small change would have. So even though the algorithm only affected maybe a few hundred sites, we ran several hundred thousand queries to sort of make sure that the impact was relatively limited in scope. And then we also have a manual team who sort of picks on the individual sites that might be affected and sort of confers and says, yes, this is a bad experience. So, for example, I was lucky enough to sort of see some of the testing. There was another merchant who, if you search for Dead Kennedy's trucker hat, you know, these really specific queries, they don't order, you know, you think you're ordering from them, but when you place the order, they would actually go and try to find the product on the web and order it at that point.
So what were they doing, writing pages with a bunch of bizarre queries in them, hoping to catch your spider?
It's definitely the case that if you have a really specific, what we call a long tail query, it's a little easier to rank for that. So one phrase that was mentioned was discount LaFont glasses.
Right.
It turns out if you do an exact phrase search for that using double quotes, that only happens on the web like 15 times. Like Bing finds it maybe 6 times.
Right.
So if you have those words on your page, it's not that hard to rank for that page, for that phrase.
Although I have to say Google Predict, when I did it, went right to it. It even suggested eyeglasses eyewear and eyeglass frames as a completion for discount LaFont. Yeah. Pretty impressive.
So Matt, explain the other part of this, just philosophically, that you know, and Gina and Leo know, but I think that people don't quite understand is the issue of manually intervening and how if you went, okay, this guy's bad, so fine, we'll get rid of him. And how not only does that not scale, but it's just not the way, it kind of violates the law here, that the algorithm is then no longer the same to all.
Right. That's a great point in that while it is the case that we do reserve the right to take manual action in very limited circumstances, if it's web spam, that's my team, if we have a court order, if there's something security related like viruses or malware, really, you know, the idea of taking manual action, you have to realize that's not always scalable. It might not work in other languages, for example. So what we try to do is, to a first approximation, we try to find the algorithms that are going to work well. And I can give you a quick story to sort of, you know, demonstrate that. 2 years ago, the pendulum was swinging the other way. There was a guy who wrote a story that a kid had borrowed his dad's credit card number and had hired two hookers, but the hookers were supposed to be playing Xbox with him. And so there was
like
a complete,
my son.
Yeah, he was, you know, let's play Xbox together. Yeah.
I totally want to play Xbox with hookers. That sounds fun. Kinect, especially.
Doesn't that sound fun? Yeah.
Now, let's play Dance Central. Kinect's a good idea, Gina. You've just invented a new form of porn.
Right? So exactly. It's like the hoax could not have been better constructed to get links. And in fact, I think Fox News picked up that particular hoax.
What a surprise.
And after it had gotten traction, the guy came out and said, yeah, by the way, I totally made that up. So then people are saying, well, it's not fair. You know, people are allowing these guys to basically lie, you know, hoax marketing. And so I basically did a blog post 2 years ago that said, look, if someone's doing a link scheme, we do reserve the right to take action on it. And that can include, you know, limited situations where someone's...
Uh-oh, he's frozen. Look at that.
Oh, mid-sentence.
Yeah. What do you think he was going to say? Let's have a game. We'll complete Matt's phrase.
I love he has the hand movement going on. It's like, really?
He's
going to
say, and I really like Bing.
Oh.
No. You lose.
Poor Matt.
Poor Matt. He's on his wife's Mac. And it's probably on Wi-Fi. We're gonna actually. Why don't we? While I'm getting him back, why don't we take a break? I love this subject, and you're right, Gina. We could go on forever. And this is, I guess, what Matt does. Really, a lot of what he does, day in day out, is. Hey, welcome back, Matt.
Sorry about that.
Well, it also relates to the EU thing, which we should talk about too.
Yeah. So I was just saying, this is probably a lot of what you do on a day-to-day basis, Matt. Is this kind of looking for these kinds of flaws? I mean, I wouldn't call that link bait that spam precisely, or would you? Would Google call that spam?
Well, that's where the pendulum sort of went all the way to one extent, because as soon as we said we were willing to take action in that very specific circumstance, the people started shouting about the other direction, saying Google shouldn't be the truth police.
Right.
And that's totally true. We don't want to be in the position of saying this is correct or this is not correct. We really just want to reflect.
Oh, he's gone again. Jeff, what you say in your blog post is that as Google, Facebook, Twitter, and other private players come to be the law of the land on the internet, and that's what the real issue is here, this is the responsibility that they carry, they need to start acting like public players. Let's make it explicit with constitutions, bills of rights, the means of enforcement.
Yeah, because as Larry Lessig says, code is law, and we're seeing that to be the case here, and I don't want the government really to do it, but they've got to do it based on principles of some form or another. And, you know, I've argued for the Bill of Rights, but I think if you're Google, they've gotten into hot water of sorts when a company there was a company, for example, that was downgraded as a spammer, and they came in and said, no, we're a business directory.
Right.
And frankly, if you and I looked at it, we'd say, yeah, that kind of looks like spam. But Google said, yeah, it's spam. But then they took them to court, and that's kind of the basis of what's happening with Google and the EU. The EU has just announced two days ago that they're going to investigate Google for antitrust with these kinds of cases. Well, the problem here is that when Google does have the manual adjudication to say, you're a spammer, you're not a legitimate site, and so when they do that, they have it's the one case where they kind of do operate in monopoly power. And my argument is that what they should have is a different adjudication structure. They should have a jury of peers.
Yes, I agree. I think that's what's missing is some form of, well, we've talked about before, Google needs an ombudsman, but some form of third-party adjudication, I think, would be avoid the courts.
Yeah, I don't want it to be government. Eric Schmidt says government, government going to run Google better than Google does? No.
Right, no.
But I think that it's in the question here is to look at where the interests are aligned. Let's say you had 12 business people who run businesses and use Google to do so. It's in their interest to have Google send to legitimate businesses like them. It's in the customer's interest to have this happen, and it's in Google's interest. The only one who's malaligned from that is the scum bucket who's spamming.
Right.
And so the question of is this spam or is it not, is it illegitimate or is it not, now rests solely in Google's hands, either through algorithm or judgment. And that's what gets Google in trouble now with its huge market share given to it by European consumers, let's be quick to say. And so the EU comes in and says, no, monopoly. Well, it's not. The irony of the EU going after Google is Google set the rules for ethical search results before Google was Overture, and Overture sold placement.
Yeah.
Right? So Google came along and cleaned that up.
Right.
And now the EU is coming and saying, well, you dare to point to, your own stuff like YouTube. Well, Danny Sullivan did a really good, really smart-assed post. I hope I didn't get the dump button for that. In which he said, I searched for cars on Google. It didn't send me to Bing's car page. How dare they?
Right.
It sent me straight to cars.
Right.
And so Google's in an unfortunate position with a lot of this, and I think it has to figure out how to stand on principle. Its algorithms, in its view, I think, Matt will correct me here, are its principle. But in cases of manual adjudication, it needs to have somebody to hide behind. And it needs to have more transparency, not about the algorithm, but about these kinds of rules and how this operates, I think.
In the best of all worlds, Google wouldn't be in the content business. And then you would avoid this conflict of interest entirely if it were just...
Right, they don't want to be in the content business. I don't want them in the content business.
But YouTube is the content business.
Well, that is, yes. Yeah. Well, wait a second. Is it or isn't it? YouTube is another platform for content. Google is not a producer of content there.
Yeah, but okay, but if, well, yeah. It's difficult. I mean, it's really what is the business of Google? And if you wanted it to be pure, it would have to be search, not ads.
Well, no, but Google's more than search.
If Google points back at an ad page of its own, then it's making revenue off a search result, then that's where you get this conflict of interest.
Yeah, but hold on a second there. So by that logic then, Leo, then the New York Times should never point to another New York Times story. It should only point to Washington Post and Wall Street Journal stories.
Good point.
Right? Of course you point to your own stuff.
Right.
I sat in meetings with Jerry Yang way back in the premature days when he was still there and you could. And, they bragged at Yahoo about how we have this fire hose. We can point to our stuff. AOL said the same thing. So, right. Hello, EU. What's so wrong with going ahead and pointing to your own stuff when you build an asset? Everybody does that.
Right.
And I know I come off like Google fanboy, and Matt can sit there quietly and say, oh, good, Jarvis is the one defending people. I don't have to. But it's just the truth of life. There's this, in Europe especially now, there's this anti-Googleism that strikes me as anti-Americanism and in some stripes anti-capitalism. And so when you see stories like the New York Times story, it gets everybody riled up to say, aha, Google caused this problem. But it didn't.
Well, and I thought the story was interesting that they also talked about MasterCard and eBay. And this guy was clearly someone who sees how close he can get to the edge,
right
up to the threshold. So
yeah, in the story, he actually, the woman calls her credit card company, disputes it. The company puts the payment on hold. And then apparently somebody from the company called the credit card company saying, no, this is the customer and I want to pay that bill.
Yeah, this guy was a piece of work. Really.
It is the best. It's one of the most. It Pulitzer Prize for sure. It's a great story. I just love it. And you make the point, I think, Jeff, very well. Perhaps the reporter would have done better to call Matt Cutts.
Well, and I think that's a problem that Google, frankly, had. Because I'm very serious about that, is that Matt, forget about defending Google. There were questions that we're talking about right now about, well, what does this mean? What's the next step? How can you stop this that a good reporter would go to? And the reporter whined in the story that they talked to a Google spokesperson who did the phone call, was supposed to send an email and didn't. I hate it when reporters complain about PR people not, being nice to them. But the mistake there was that I think that the better story would have been if Matt had been able to talk to the reporter and just talk through these issues, these what ifs. Well, if we did manually go in, what happens? If we did look at sentiment, what happens? Because it's a better, fuller story.
And that's why we wanted to wait a little while to get the blog post out.
Yeah.
Go ahead,
Gina. The post really addressed the issues that the sentiment analysis point was very good. It really addressed a lot of issues. But in the end, the post didn't say what the changes that Google made, right? Because Google does have to protect that information to make it less able to be gamed in the end. And it took a couple of days for the post to come out as well. So, the story would have been much better if the reporter had followed up a little more.
Story would have been better, but it would have been more accurate.
It would have been more accurate. I mean, if the fact that the reporter wasn't able to see that the Times had linked this company.
Right. Well, and you know, if you view source, you'll see rel equals no follow. He didn't have enough technical sophistication to even do that. Although I confess, I repeated his story without checking myself. So that's probably the first thing we should all have done is, and then it's apparent there's no link juice at all.
The no-follow issue in terms of, you know, the responsibility on news organizations to, if you're truly going to be neutral when you mention something versus wanting someone to read
That's interesting, isn't it?
It's an interesting question. I mean, will we get to the point where news organizations are tech savvy enough to know what no-follow means? Like, this is a neutral link and this is a link we're recommending? I don't know. We're getting down to nitty gritty, but it's an interesting question.
I'm trying to remember. I think Twitter started implementing rel no-follow globally, and I think that's a bad idea because do they still do that, Matt? Do you know?
They do, certainly on their website, and if you're a beginning website and you're not ready for the spammer influx and you have a lot of people, that can be a very reasonable thing to do. What I would love to see people do is be a little more nuanced. For example, I just crossed 10,000 tweets, you know, and so the odds that I'm going to do some spam tweets are pretty low.
Maybe let you out of jail, for instance.
Yeah, once you've been around for a while or you have someone else who's trusted vouch for you or any other metric that you have, you know, on Wikipedia, maybe you edited and you didn't get reverted, you could remove those.
Because rel nofollow really neuters the web. It neuters the ability to generate links. In fact, it hurts Google's ability to generate valuable page rank. I mean, a link from Twitter from a highly regarded person on Twitter should be valuable. It should add to the Google juice.
Absolutely. And Twitter has its own internal algorithm for user authority. And I think that should come into play. I mean, it neuters the web if everyone uses nofollow. But if we use it smartly and people understand the difference between a neutral link and a I want you to click on this link, that it would stop spamming. It would help Matt and his team.
Sorry, wouldn't
or at least reduce the ROI.
Right.
Sorry, Jeff, go ahead.
Wouldn't that be helped if the tools enabled you to put in two kinds of links? We've had this discussion before about positive or negative, but maybe it's recommended or neutral is a decent way to go that people can, you know, there's a little link tool on your blog tool, right? There's a little link button in your blog tool. Yeah. And similarly, you put a link into Twitter and then shorten it. Maybe you have two shortening options.
Right.
Bit.ly, bit.no. You know,
click me, don't be right. But you know that kind of nuance at this point in time is probably just the usability wise is we're
a lot of work.
There.
A lot of work.
Yeah. Bear in mind that it took about 5 years before we introduced nofollow because, for the most part, when people link to something, it's because they do endorse it or they do like it or they want people to see it.
Right.
So you know, it took a few years before we really even saw a need to say, hey, there are some links where maybe if you run WordPress, you might want to put nofollow on commenters until you trust them or something.
Right. Yeah, I think that's
the other interesting thing here is in Europe, at least in the UK, as I understand it, you can be held responsible for that to which you link in a court of law.
Wow.
And it would be really nice if you could have a form of link that says, I am definitely not endorsing this,
not
but
responsible.
In the interest of free speech, I'm showing you where the bozo is, which is part of what we need to be able to do on the web, too, is otherwise it does turn into an echo chamber. If all I can do is link to those things that I think are good and worthwhile and I recommend, it becomes a very boring place.
Jeff Jarvis, Gina Trapani, Matt Cutts from Google, talking about Google and the cloud. From Kevin Marks, a link about the boring couple. They both won and lost in court today, and we'll talk about that in just a little bit. But first, I'd like to talk a little bit about Ford. And Ford Sync, the amazing technology that's in many Ford motor cars and Lincoln and Mercury vehicles as well. It's just fantastic. It's hands-free calling, turn-by-turn directions. You get full GPS even without the GPS screen. It'll walk you through. In fact, the turn-by-turn is so smart, it knows where you're going. It watches traffic alerts, and it'll reroute you around traffic problems automatically. 911 assist and of course, complete control of your audio system, including things like, play this week in Google number 71. and boom, it plays for you. I just love it. These Ford Sync vehicles come with a USB port so you can connect your iPod or your Zune or your phone. They come with just the most amazing voice recognition software. And in fact, with some phones, including my Android phones and the Windows Phone 7 phones, it'll even read you text messages as they come in. You want to give it a try, go to your local Ford, Lincoln, or Mercury dealer and test drive the Ford Sync. It is fantastic. And I'll tell you, I wouldn't consider a car that didn't have it. From now on, that's it. And here's a new program from Ford we're kind of excited about. It's the 2012 Ford Focus Global Test Drive. Here comes the new Focus. Early 2011, the 2012 Ford Focus is going to come out. Three model lineup, the five-door hatchback, the four-door sedan, the five-door wagon. I saw it at Blog World. It is so beautiful. So slick. This is the new world car from Ford. And it includes just like the latest parking technologies, like the active park assist, like on the Flex where it parks itself. The rear view camera. So, I mean, I got that on the Mustang. I don't know how people live with that. If I get in a car without a rear view camera, I go, how do you back up here? What am I doing? It's scary. The new fuel efficient engines, completely updated, including a torque vector control system, which hugs the curves. The new My Ford Touch, which is Sync Plus. It's got the 8-inch screen on the on the center console and then the two screens behind the steering wheel. I can go on and on. You could be one of the first to test drive the new 2012 Ford Focus in Madrid at Spain's National Institute for Aerospace Technology. Yes, it's a contest. Go to twitfordfocus.com. It'll take you to the Facebook page where you can make a video up to 2 minutes in length saying two things. Why you should be one of the first to test drive the Ford Focus and where you'd like the $10,000 to go, what charity you'd like the $10,000 to go to. Ford's going to give away $500,000 in all. Take you and a friend, and I guess there'll be many winners, to Madrid to test drive the Ford Focus. And this is the thing I like best. This contest is open to our audience members everywhere in the world. You're all invited to participate. Go to twitfordfocus.com. Tell us what charitable cause you'd like to support and then why you should be on your way to Madrid early next year to test the 2012 Ford Focus. The global test drive is on twitfordfocus.com. We thank Ford so much for their support of This Week in Google. Thank you, Kevin Marks, for this link. I just like the story. The boring couple beats Google in court and is awarded $1.
This is a fun story.
$1. So you know about this, Jeff, right? This is a couple that sued Google because a Street View car drove down their private road and took a picture of their house. They weren't even German. Most of the charges, which included negligence, were thrown out last year. But Boring versus Google continued in court on one last charge, trespassing. The case is over. The judge ruled that Google was indeed guilty of count two trespass and awarded the boring couple $1 in penalties. The Borings tried to appeal this to the Supreme Court. The court turned down the appeal. So a Google spokesperson says, "We are pleased that this lawsuit has finally ended with the plaintiff's acknowledgement that they are entitled to only $1. Now we know
that was a pretty good statement.
Yeah. Now we know what a Google Street View picture of your house is worth. I just love that story.
So I don't live in San Francisco, but I saw a Google Street View car in San Diego, and I was like so excited about
it. Did you moon him?
I didn't. It was parked and the camera was kind of covered. So, and I felt like a little bit of a stalker walking up to it and checking it out. But, you know, they're very pretty clearly. This one I saw anyway was really colorful and had the Google logo on it. It was very clear what it was.
Matt,
I was out of my mind.
This is what we want to lobby for, Matt. If you want to carry this back to the main office, we want them to release the schedule for the Street View car like the day before so that we can line up and perform.
Performance art.
As the Google car Maps goes by.
I think I'll pass the suggestion
would
on.
You?
Certainly.
Just imagine how much more interesting Street View would be if people knew ahead of time. And if somebody's shy, they can, you know, hide.
Right. Less lawsuits about privacy.
Right. Exactly. Just tell us you're coming.
Like we told you.
Now, you know, by the way, that everybody's going to be mooning it and dancing and there'll be all sorts of great performance art going on out there. Somebody told me that New York City, there is a tour that does this. where that you drive around in these stadium seat buses facing the side, and they have performers, like improv performers, waiting for the bus to arrive. They do a little show, and then it goes on, and they have speakers on the bus that encourage bystanders to participate in the performance art as the bus is driving around.
Have That's you a ever, new one on me. Have you heard of that,
Jeff? I've never heard of it, but I'd love to
myth,
do it.
Myth, I think. Myth.
No, my sister is told me about it. She wouldn't lie.
At least we want the Petaluma route, right?
Yeah.
Because I'll fly up to Petaluma. We'll Twiggle put on some performance art for
that's,
the
That's happened. Remember they had a marching band and the Street View car went through the marching band? So Google must do that sometimes.
I think there's at least one picture in front of the Googleplex where they said, show up on this date. And you, like one guy held up his Will You Marry Me sign and all that sort of stuff.
It would be so fun.
They've probably broken up. And that's there forever.
Yeah. Well, that's a good point.
Wah, wah.
No, don't say that. That's so unromantic, Jeff.
I'm a New Yorker.
You sound like an old married man, New Yorker.
Well, that I am. In Germany now, the next fight is neighbors have found that their homes got pixelated when they didn't want it.
Oh, no. You blurred me. You blurred me.
So now there are fights about that. They want to be or pixel one.
How dare you blur my windows?
Do not blur me.
But the originals are blurred. So there's no original to go back to.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just imagine this army of Google interns, like these earnest young people who are dying to like kind of climb the ranks within Google, having to like color in these houses and then uncolor them,
I got a number of emails from Germans, Jeff, who said, please do not call us German Blurmany. We do not like that.
Oh,
but this is so good.
Maybe this could be a lie.
Yeah. All right, let's talk a little bit about net neutrality. This one is much more complicated than it seems on the face of it. And there was a very good discussion yesterday on Tom Merritt's Tech News Today from Network Provider about this Comcast versus Level 3 thing. And I'm so anxious and so glad and happy to berate Comcast for any reason at all. And certainly there's some fault there, but apparently...
There's a no-follow here.
Yeah.
Cue the no-follow.
Rel equals no-follow. We need an audio no-follow.
Your audio no-follow.
But...
Just use a different voice. When you talk like this, you don't want to follow it. When you talk like
not
this...
Not a recommendation.
Oh, my.
Matt, can you work on that too? As long as we got a shopping list for you, Matt. And another thing.
Voice recognition. Yeah.
Yeah. Apparently, Level 3, which got the Netflix... Well, let me give you the story from the beginning. Level 3 carries Netflix streaming. They did a deal, and they got it away from Akamai, who used to do the Netflix streaming. That's a lot of bandwidth, we know now. It's a huge percentage of primetime bandwidth. And Comcast has said, dudes... You're free riding on our network, and we want to charge you Level 3. Level 3 wrote a blog post saying, this is net neutrality. You're a toll road on the internet, blah, blah, blah. But they gave in. They said, what are we going to do? You know, we don't want Netflix to be mad at us. Of course, the real problem in my mind is if there were any competition in the internet service world, if there were a choice for most people besides Comcast, if I were Level 3, I'd say, okay, fine, Comcast, go ahead, block us, see how your customers feel about that. But there isn't, and so a lot of customers, just as the same thing happened with Cablevision and television, are stuck. Well, now Comcast says, well, it's more complicated than that. In fact, Level 3 kind of played some games so that instead of spreading the traffic to Akamai used to bring it right to our various head ends. Level 3 is coming in at one head end and burdening our network, getting it from that head end to all the other head ends. That's not how it was supposed to be. We are reasonably charging. Does anybody want to weigh in on this one, or should we just say it's...
Well, let me ask a question.
Yes.
As a New Yorker, let me answer a question with a question.
Yes.
In the discussion about the FCC, which we'll get to in a second, too, I know, I saw one reference to saying that, well, you should pay more for more bits. But that's not the issue here.
It's not.
Just a matter of how many bits. It's a matter of the quality of the delivery.
Well, let me put it this way. I pay Comcast for internet access, and that includes the whole freaking internet. That includes Netflix. Does it seem fair that Comcast could then go to Google or Netflix or anybody else and say, yeah, if you want our customers, you're going to have to pay us a little extra money here. That does seem like that's what net neutrality is all about, is that you shouldn't be able to have a toll road.
Right, but what I'm asking, Leo, is that there's two different things here, I think. One is basically quantity and the other one is speed, no?
No, it's purely quantity.
It is purely quantity,
it's purely
okay.
quantity. It's the issue, according to, as I understand it, the issue is, according to Comcast, the way Akamai did it, they would deliver those bits right to the head ends of Comcast, so it didn't burden the Comcast network the way Level 3 is doing it, and they're saying they're kind of a handoff at one point saying, you get it to your customers. I think this is very complicated. I think there is more to it than meets the eye. As I said, I'm very happy to blame Comcast. But maybe there is more. And apparently I'm told that if you really want to know more about this, you read the NANOG mailing list, the North America Network Operators Group.
And that sounds like a good read.
It's on my must-read list.
That sounds like a beach read. Sorry, I didn't mean to.
It probably is a really good read because these guys are fascinating, really smart. I know some NANOG members, but I don't know. You're right. I confess I haven't had the fortitude to sit down and read the mailing list. But there's a lot. There's more than meets the eye here, and some say really Level 3 is pulling some shenanigans. I don't know who's at fault here. I guess the best I could say is this does raise the issue of network neutrality, and this really is the first time we've heard of a company, a big internet service provider, and Comcast is the biggest, saying, I mean, what if they went to Google and said, hey, you want our customers to make Google searches, you're going to have to pay for that.
That's the issue.
Access.
That's the
issue. Likely be YouTube, right?
Yeah, that absolutely, yeah. Isn't it?
Well, I go back to when Excite at Home came out. I think we talked about this once on the show 20 or 30 shows ago. When Excite at Home came out, they were saying, this was the original net neutrality problem. They said, if you dead end right into us, we'll allow you to do that and we'll charge you for the privilege. It was the exact opposite of this case. It was saying that if you want, it would be like saying to Akamai, we'll charge you for the privilege of making a direct connection into our head ends. And as a result, your stuff will be delivered at quality. Right? And so Akamai, in a sense, to Comcast, did them the favor, it would appear, of creating these direct connections. And then when Level 3 doesn't and acts like just any other network customer, it's kind of like Akamai made them look bad. But why should Level 3's bits be discriminated against versus my bits?
Maybe this is just too complicated for us to discuss. But I think it's something, it's a big issue.
It is.
I think a lot of this would go away, and I don't think you'd need a net neutrality regulation if there were true competition among internet service Amen. Providers. But very few of us have more than one or two choices. And if both of them are being rapacious, we don't have much choice. So the Federal Communications Commission is set to vote on net neutrality rules this month, December. On Wednesday, the FCC staff circulated an agenda for December 21st. Saying that they would vote on that day on an order that adopts, quote, basic rules of the road to preserve the open internet as a platform for innovation, investment, competition, and free expression.
That sounds optimistic.
I like the phrase.
Yeah, me too, man. It's on solstice.
Yeah.
Let's hope the hippies rule.
There are, according to this article on CNET, two major areas of contention. Broadband providers want to ensure the language used in the rules would not prohibit them from managing their networks. That's code for things like what Comcast did with BitTorrent, using Sandvine to make sure that not too many bits from BitTorrent were spread over the network. But it does seem reasonable that they have to manage their networks, and we were demanding more and more bandwidth over their pipes. Or they would like to make sure that they continue to have the right to charge different prices for different levels of service. And I'm with you on this, Jeff. If you're saying I want more bandwidth, more speed, you should be able to. I mean, they should be able to say, well, for the highest bandwidth, you pay the highest price. I don't think anybody has a problem with that, right? As long as at every tier, all the bits are treated equally.
Exactly.
That Bing doesn't somehow get a better deal than Google, or vice versa.
Right. Paying less for dial-up, you pay more for broadband.
Yeah,
that's cool.
That's always been that way.
Yeah. Yes.
Secondly, the second bone of contention is from wireless service providers. And this is that famous Google-Verizon pact, who want wireless networks to be exempt from any net neutrality regulations. And, of course, Google and Verizon issued a joint statement saying that Google said, yes, that's a good idea, that LAN networks are one thing, but these wireless networks are another, and they should be exempt.
Oh!
Well, maybe if you put a term on it, I could see exempt for the next year or 2 years, I could see. Because they're nascent.
Then they'd say, why bother? I just think it the idea that wired and wireless are at all different is antediluvian. It's ridiculous. The only thing that might happen, here's the problem. The competition we are going to get to the wire to our door
is going to be wireless.
Wireless is through things like white spaces that Google has fought for. And now, if all of that future competition, you just said the solution is competition. But the competition is regulated.
Right. There's no competition because the FCC did set it up that way.
That's what's so screwy about this. The only way to get competition is through wireless, and you're making wireless hampered against wired, then we might as well not have the competition.
Matt?
And it seems like one thing that everybody could agree on is if there were more wireless spectrum, that would be really nice. So the FCC is doing a lot of stuff about white spaces and, you know, some of these things that used to be taken up with analog television channels. They don't need that much room when they switch to digital. And, you know, wow, there's so much interesting stuff going on with wireless and phones. And the more you can have that ability to try new things, I think the better everybody will be off.
Julius Genachowski, the chairman of the FCC, did discuss a compromise, which I might be able to get behind, similar to what Henry Waxman proposed earlier this year, which would bar internet service providers from discriminating against rival internet traffic. I don't know how key rival is. And include some limited net neutrality protections on wireless. Maybe that's a good compromise. Maybe not, not completely free reign on wireless, but some.
Here's where I'm starting to go, and this is very much unlike me because I'm not anti-government, but and I'm not libertarian. I'm a Democrat, but I sometimes sound like it. But in this case, I'm starting to wonder whether the internet is such a utility and so important strategically that it to follow the analogy of the interstate. The government will pay private people to build it, but because we paid to build it, it's open and it's ours.
I kind of, it's so funny because that's exactly what I thought. It's like the interstate highway system.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be owned by anyone. It's a national resource. And there's all sorts of economic considerations that it's in the national interest that it be open, free, affordable. We pay way more for bandwidth. We're the 22nd or 23rd.
Yeah.
In availability and cost of bandwidth in the world.
Yeah, so all this hoo-ha about supporting their investment in our bandwidth, well, they're not investing. Look at trying to use your AT&T phone. Look at what's trying to go on.
Essentially, what they're trying to do is to maximize the profit from the copper that they put in, because they don't want, they want to get all the money out of that before they upgrade to fiber or whatever is next.
And back in the day when I knew this stuff, I knew that cable companies, it's been quite a while, it's been a few years, but when I was involved in this, cable companies were getting a gross margin of 45%
right.
on their delivery of bandwidth. Obscene.
Well, I'll just put a standing offer in. I will buy fiber from anyone who will send it to
me
my
too.
House. I can't get it, you know?
You can't get it.
That's pretty frustrating.
You know, Verizon stopped. I mean, I think Fios is done, right? Now they've gone everywhere they're going to go.
Yeah.
Now LTE goes live, and I'm going to talk about that in just a second. So don't go anywhere. This is wireless, and you're right, Jeff. This may be the future for high speed internet. Before we talk about that, I want to talk about getting rid of those old gadgets with Gazelle. Don't sell it. Gazelle it. Gazelle is a really fun, good service, and every time I talk about it, I get tweets and emails from people who tried it. Were maybe perhaps a little skeptical. I was, the first time I heard about Gazelle, I said, well, let me get a box together and see. Here's what happens. You go to gazelle.com, G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.com. There's a form there that you fill in and say, this is what I've got. These are my gadgets. And they'll tell you, you tell them what quality it is, whether you got the cords, the cables, and all of that stuff. And then they tell you what they'll pay you for it. Then you get a box. You put it all in a box. They send you the mailing label, so you don't pay for the shipping. And all of a sudden, lo and behold, you get a check about a week later. Or you can get a, I think they have PayPal cards, Amazon cards. You have a variety of stuff. Oh, look, redesigned page. That's the old one. This is the new one. Oh, neat. Cash for your gadgets. Here's all the categories. Blu-ray players, calculators. How many calculators do you have lying around the house? Camcorders, camera lenses, cell phones. Oh, boy. Oh, baby. I got a drawer full. Desktops, digital cameras, e-readers, PDAs, hard drives, GPS devices, gaming consoles, home audio. You fill in the form. Let's see. I see. I'm going to try a Bose. Let's see. Bose Wave Radio. Time to get rid of that. You tell it the condition. No, it works. No noticeable flaws. Perfect. You just fill out this form. See? I've got all the original stuff. Yeah, sure, sure. Original box? No, I don't have that. Come on. Let's get real. Threw that out. And they say, yeah, it's worth $88. So you add that to the box. Then you send, and you can send a box full of crap. And then they will send you a check. In fact, I'm going to give you a little hint here. If you use the offer code TWIG, they'll give you a 5% bonus on checkout. So they give you a little extra just to let us give us a little bang for our buck. They also do recycling. If there's no value to your gadget, and God knows I have a few, they will absolutely recycle it in a environmentally friendly way, green recycling. They have charity pages too for your forget having a bake sale, have a gadget sale. GAZELLE gazelle.com. Don't sell it. Gazelle it. Use the offer code TWIG for an additional 5%. We thank them so much for their support. This week in Google, here comes LTE. Verizon had a press conference today. LTE, which is, stands for long-term evolution. Boy, is there a terrible acronym. What the hell?
Is it? It's 4G?
It's 4G. Yeah, it's 4G.
It's 4G. Yep.
Well, you know what? It's interesting because the definition of 4G, technically, is actually much higher speed than anybody in the U.S. is offering. Technically.
Yeah, that figures.
But we call it 4G because it's faster than 3G.
It's like 3.9G.
Yeah.
3.9G.
So LTE, which, in theory, I think what they're saying, I can't remember. I looked it up once what 4G is. If you look on Wikipedia, I think they're saying like 10 megabits. It's nowhere near that.
So when that actually happens, it'll be like, no, this is the real 4G. That was just, yeah. That was
what
really
will they call it? They'll call it fourth dimension.
It'll be 4GS.
4GS. Superior 4G. LTE will be available in 38 markets, 60 airports on December 5th. Wait a minute. That's
like
Saturday.
4 days from now.
Yay. Woohoo, Matt Siopi. Woohoo. Yeah. They're going to offer two different USB modems from Verizon. I don't know what the costs are going to be.
MiFi? MiFi?
Presumably. It will be available in the Bay Area. I'm sure Manhattan's on the list. Let me look. 38 cities.
God, why do I have to be in a second-tier city?
Is San Diego second-tier?
Let me I'm moving back to New York.
Let me go to the
Yay, Gina, yay, come back. Follow the light.
You know, they got this bus that drives around and let me see. There is a Verizon LTE site. I'm just trying to find it. The LTE
bzw.com/LTE/overview.com.html.
Here it is, the LTE Information Center. But where is the list of cities?
Doesn't have.
Where's the list of cities?
You can follow it on Twitter. You can listen.
I don't want to follow you on Twitter. I want the list.
Get more information here.
Cities.
No. I saw that they do have San Francisco and San Jose, and that's as much as I read.
That's all. You stopped there, didn't you? You stopped right there. Wait a minute. Look, here's a button that says test men and women. I wonder what that is.
What does that mean?
I don't know, but... glad they have a button that says that.
I will continue to research.
All right, we're gonna let Gina find out where LTE is, but that's what happened is that Sprint was taking all the air out of the room with their fake 4G, which is really WiMAX, and Verizon said we can't let them those sons of guns, we can't let them continue to own the 4G. In fact, Sprint and Verizon were fighting over whether it is even 4G. So they're going to have a, let me see if, Engadget has a review of the LG VL600 modem. And the company today's announcement, blah, 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 blah. It's rather large. It sure is. It's huge. It's a USB dongle. Comes with an extra.
Oh, see, that's what gets me mad. The only thing I want is MiFi.
Yeah.
The dongle's ridiculous. There's no reason to have a dongle.
So now remember that there is no one using 4G or the LTE 4G right now. But Engadget testing it said they got consistent speeds of 7 megabits down, 1 megabit up. That's better than a lot of people's home service. Overall speeds held steady. Remember, nobody's using it except
nobody's
you
using it.
At 5 to 6 megabits down, 1 megabit up. That's faster than WiMAX. And I have to say I was very underwhelmed with WiMAX in Las Vegas when we used
That's clear. Is that clear?
That's clear, yeah.
I got a test one from them, which I'm about to send back. And yeah, it got me good bandwidth here, like 7-8. But then
right.
People said, "Oh, wait, in any market where it's being used, you don't get much."
That's the problem, is that it's shared bandwidth.
And the other problem is it had software on the machine, and demanded to upgrade the thing
that.
When I wasn't online, and all this magilla. MiFi is just the only way to go.
Yeah, I agree with you.
And that's, by the way, why I got.
What'd you get? Oh, you got it. Samsung. He's playing Angry Birds on the Samsung Galaxy Tab. So, well.
The
beautiful
tab.
Thing about it is, it in fact is.
Yeah, you got a big, he has big hips, so it goes right in his hip pockets.
Hey. I got smaller hips than you.
You know, it makes me wish I wore blazers still.
That's why now they become like my photographer's jacket.
Yeah, I think more and more people are going to pick up blazers so they can carry around their big ass gadgets.
Yeah, seriously. I got to carry a freaking purse.
I want a purse.
That's the worst.
Purse. I don't want a purse. So how do you like it, Jeff?
I like it. I mean, it has a lot of the same problems that the iPad has to me. So I'm not, you know, for all those people saying.
Great screen, though. Great screen.
It's got a good screen. It doesn't have the USB I want. It's not a phone, which is stupid.
That bugs me, too. It's like, if I'm going to carry that around, I want it at least to be a phone.
But of course, it is ridiculous.
Yeah, well, I don't know. That looks kind of good.
Well, I got big hands and a big head, too, by the way. But the fact that it fits in the pocket is great. I had a senior moment at my office yesterday. I'm looking all around. I said, oh, my God, I've lost it already. I'm going over the desk. It was in my pocket.
At least it wasn't on your head. No, I'm very impressed by it. I like it a lot.
The reason I got it was it also has the access point.
You did not get. Oh, it has a. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I did not get. Well, I went. You know, I went and bought it with no plan. It was a mistake. I can't get geography. I can't get everything else.
No, you need the plan.
I bought a separate MiFi. So screw it. I went back and I got the the plan.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have to say, I love that Android can still do the Wi-Fi hotspot and the USB tethering, because I went to Tennessee to see my grandfather last week. He turned 99 right before Thanksgiving, and they, you know, there's no Wi-Fi to be had in his house. So I fired up my Android device, and I had a little USB straw
sort of get
the net through, and so I could keep track of stuff.
Pretty darn sweet.
Yeah.
So did you get the Verizon, Jeff?
No, I got the
Sprint. T-Mobile, okay.
And does it do the tethering?
Right. I think the Sprint does tethering too. Pretty sure it
costs
does.
More.
But you pay $20 a month. That's right. Yep.
Yeah. This is included. So.
All right. So we got one more story, and I'm going to put Matt on the spot. Groupon. Groupon.
I know nothing.
I know nothing. Groupon. The rumor is, and this is now All Things D talking. This is the Wall Street Journal, New York Times, all saying. Google in hot and heavy conversations with Groupon, which is the group buying site, to buy it for an unbelievable $5.3 to $6 billion.
And the obvious joke?
Matt? What?
Uh-huh. Matt,
did they get a discount? Did they commit their friends to buy Groupon clones?
All right, Gina, do you use Groupon? Are you a Groupon
I've seen ads for it. I see ads for it a lot, but I know I haven't used it. But some folks are really into it, and I mean, it kind of makes sense, right? Facebook deals. you know, it's similar to that, right, from what I understand?
Well, what's interesting is it's very much like the Beacon thing, because if you link it to Facebook, it does all the stuff Beacon wanted to do, but Facebook got in trouble with, you know, your friend.
Which is what you bought.
Gina right. just bought, got an amazing deal on an 18-hole golf game. Right. That's what they're offering me right now. $27 for 18 holes of golf, including cart rental, supply of warm-up range balls, and take-home souvenir at the fabulous Healdsburg Golf Club at Taman Park, a $57 value. So every day you get one of these.
Yeah, you get one, and for me, they're all crap. I don't want any.
I agree with you. But 57 people in my area bought this.
Well, but it's only 57 people. Matt, I know we've given you other tasks today. Can I give you one more here, even if you know nothing about this?
It's like the honey-do list. I love this.
And say, don't do it.
Stop.
It's.
I know a small little podcast network you could buy for $1
billion. Yeah.
Cheap.
I hear they have really good production values, too.
Fantastic.
Fantastic hosts.
They have
good conversation.
Hey, a revenue model. Actually, Groupon's doing all right. According to Wall Street, $500 million a year in revenue. So, Jeff, come on. This is a good buy. And growing fast. In fact, I won't say anymore.
Google's MySpace.
Yeah.
This will be Google's MySpace. That was a prediction. Because the problem, I think, is that, you know, it's a fad right now. And Google looks at it and says, we don't do that. It has 3,000... one of Fred Wilson's partners had a very good post about this. Google is a technology company that has huge sales per person. Groupon is a person company. It's a sales company.
Yeah.
They have 3,000 salespeople. Owning the sales force at Hyperlocal will not scale. I repeat, it will not scale. The problem to solve here is how you scale selling to millions of businesses. Now, Google has done that to an extent. And to me, Facebook just won this by making the deals free and then making everybody an upsell customer. And so they identify who's the best prospect and they can sell in new ways. And so I think Facebook's way ahead on this model. They can put Groupon in functionality in a flash. There's no barrier to entry here. It's a very low revenue per employee company. So it gets through sheer force of will. It gets $50 million a month. That's fine. It's a nice company, but it ain't worth $5 billion. Matt, please tell them my stock money. No.
I will pass the remarks on.
Matt's going to run
Jeff
in.
Says no.
Matt's going to run in and say, guys, stop. I've got some new information.
With us about the eyeglass place, so we got to listen.
Don't you think, Jeff, that perhaps somebody's thought about this?
Rupert, you got to buy this thing. We saw it. All the kids are using it.
Yeah,
it's called Your Space or MySpace or something like that. Okay, I will, mate.
Look at this total dollars saved by Groupon users: $789 million. Total Groupons bought: 18.3 million. I don't want to do your number. Does your number of the week have anything to do with Groupon?
No,
well, then I'll give you a number. It's 2 years old. The company's 2 years old. If they do, in fact, sell for $6 billion, they will have increased their value $20 million a day since the day they were founded.
It's absurd. It's a friggin' bubble.
I was thinking of starting a similar business.
But literally, all right, so my Groupon, I've subscribed to Groupon in North Jersey. I can save
it's
up
crap.
To
84%
off laser hair removal in Pearl River. Yeah. I don't even know where Pearl River is.
No, I agree. I'm in the Napa-Sonoma area, and it is. And you only get one of these a day. So
I
this
get
is
half
it.
Off a mani-pedi in Hoboken.
I got that. Yes, I got that yesterday, but it wasn't in Hoboken. But I got the same thing, half off.
I get 52% off ice skating. I ice skate. I fall on my ass and break it.
It's crap. They're selling a bunch of crap.
I get 55% off a subscription to New Jersey Monthly. An absolute piece of junk.
It
magazine.
Is a little down market, I gotta say.
So I have to admit, I haven't used Groupon myself, but maybe there's some benefit to the fact that people get exposed to things they wouldn't normally get exposed to. Like, I don't know about you, but I
always
had to hit the same 6 or 7 restaurants, you know? And so maybe if it gets you exposed to a new restaurant or a new experience or a new business, that could be what a lot of people enjoy about it.
That was give Matt a bonus for trying to carry the water there, will you?
Very nicely done, Matt.
It was nice. It was very, very calm and easy and rational, but yeah. No.
No.
I'll pass on your sentiments.
Not going to give it to him.
No.
What about Angry Birds Day, December 11th. You going to celebrate Angry Birds Day?
I came so close to buying one of the little Angry Birds plush toys.
Today. Did you?
I knew that I have a problem. Yeah, because wow. Stuffed animals. It's been a few years.
Angry Bird plush toy.
I need that stuffed red bird.
I need it.
And I want to throw it at people in my life.
How about the guy who Googles himself and finds out he's a murder suspect?
But of a standout student here at the University of Florida.
My initial reaction was pure shock, and after that, it was just me being upset.
Zachary Garcia is a freshman from Hollywood, Florida, who stumbled upon the mistake late Saturday night. He was Googling his name when he came across the news stories. He called home, woke up his mother, and said he feared getting kicked out of school, losing his two jobs, or worse.
By the way, case of mistaken identity, it wasn't him. Just so you know. He feels much better. But
he had the funniest quote I'd ever seen, where he basically said, "I make sub sandwiches for people. The worst I could ever do is make a bad sub. I've never murdered anybody."
Android is for men.
Hey.
Okay, I'll leave that alone. I got to remember to scroll down to the bottom here.
I thought that was down there. Darn it, I should have seen. Now it's my fault that I didn't mark it above.
That's okay.
All right.
I'll save that for you. The iPhone is from Mars. The iPhone's from Zenith. Venus. Not Zenith.
You steal my punchline, too.
But it's obvious. I didn't steal it. It's just obvious.
I know it is. That's all I do is obvious punchlines.
Obvious. Android, will be the first. This is actually very telling. Angry Birds, which really was an iPhone app and an iPad app, finally came to Android, is not on Windows Phone 7. Now Rovio announces that the Angry Birds expansion pack for the season will be Android only.
Woohoo!
Angry Birds, you love it, but you don't try to play it on an iPhone.
I think it's a conspiracy against Google, because it's going to make every Android user just waste parts of the economy now.
I have the Halloween one. I want to play the...
So are they charging for seasons, though? The seasons add-on? It's not just ad-supported?
Oh, that's a good question, because the Angry Birds on Android is ad-supported, which is an interesting experiment. What did we say last week? 7 million downloads. They got to be making money on it. So there it is. It's an advent calendar, really, for Android, because Android didn't get the Halloween edition. So 25 levels for the 25 days of Christmas of holiday snow fun. Oh, wait a minute. It will also include the Halloween expansion. And it's all free.
Huh. Wait, and this isn't available for the iPhone?
And by the way, Jeff, isn't the Samsung Tab a great Angry Birds platform?
It is. It's wonderful.
Oh, you guys are killing me. Oh, you guys are killing me.
What do we do on Angry Birds Day? I actually have to look here. I haven't played Angry Birds in ages. I don't even know.
Seriously, we need to pelt one another with stuffed Angry Birds. I think that's the most appropriate.
Look, Angry Birds meetups around the world.
Well, that's a fun one.
Okay. I'm going to take a break. We're going to come back with our tip, our number, and our tool of the week. What are you doing, Jeff? What is he?
I'm making Gina jealous.
Jealous.
It's just,
Angry
it's so
Birds.
Wrong. It's so wrong. Angry I'm waiting for pure
birds.
Google tablet. Come on,
Angry
you're killing
birds.
Me.
Yeah, what about gingerbread? You got the statue, Matt. What about gingerbread?
You know, the great thing about working at Google is you get to try out some stuff. So, come work at Google and you can dog food, wonderful new products.
Honeycomb.
Which means that Matt is running gingerbread. Damn it.
Gingerbread? He's probably running honeycomb.
Yeah. Honeycomb, maybe.
He's probably running honeycomb on his tablet. He's probably running Chrome OS on his netbook. Now I keep hearing conflicting stuff. Now they're saying, yes, it will be this year. They better hurry. They got 1 month
left. I wonder what the Google Christmas present to employees is going to be. Perhaps a netbook?
Do you get a gift every year? Is that how that works?
It historically, they have. But, you know, I try not to get in the mode or the mindset where it's like Google owes me something. Right. I, you know, if I don't enjoy it, that's a problem. But I do enjoy it very much. So that's why I keep coming to Google every day.
It's funny because my employees, they say, what are you giving us? So what are you giving us? Yeah, how'd you know? Shh.
I'm a fan. Oh, sorry.
Well, if you know, I guess everybody probably knows. apparently, they're going to update the Netflix app on the Google TV, which is good because it has kind of an old and funky in it. I have to, can I, a confession? Yesterday, I come home. Henry says, I can't, the TV's not working. I said, yes, it is. He said, no, it's black. I said, oh, let me see. Oh, yeah. The Google TV has, I talked about this a couple of weeks ago. It pops up an error that says the time is wrong. Then it turns on the screensaver, and unless you know to hit the keyboard on the Google TV to wake it up, you don't see anything on your TV.
That's a bug that I can file. Yeah
would
sure.
you please? Too late. I've removed it from the chain. I actually said, it's very easy though because it's a pass through. So I just and I'm done.
Well, and it is, it's definitely, you know, the analogy with the G1 and how much better it got.
It's the G1.
You know, and you actually can see them iterating and, you know, how fast they're making changes to improve it. So I think.
And this is one measure of it is that they're finally putting the full real Netflix on it. You know, the one with where you could pick from the, you know, instead of that old version. So that's an improvement. Mm-hmm. Oh, I can't wait. And I am not going to throw out the Google TV. I'm not going to return the Google TV. I have hopes. I have high hopes. And I will just like my G1, which is in a drawer right here, someday, I will flash the firmware and it will magically appear. Before we go on with the show, I just want to mention quickly the General Electric Eco Imagination Challenge, which is rapidly coming to a close. This is a great idea. GE, put together $200 million to invest in new ideas for improving the way energy is produced, transferred, and consumed. If you go to ecoimagination.com/challenge, you can see the winners. Three different categories. The first is renewables. GE wants to encourage better ways to integrate renewable energy right into the power grid. Energy from wind, water, sun. The second investment category, grid efficiency, to convert the smart grid. The smart grid is even now out of date. They want they're going for digital energy, and finally, eco homes and buildings, which is fairly important if you think about it. It's not merely better ways to generate, but also ways to conserve. So $200 million, and if you go to Eco Imagination, ecomagination.com/ /challenge. I'm going there right now. You'll see some of the winners in the Eco Imagination Challenge. Oops, there it is. And it's just really a great thing. GE has supported our Green Tech Today show, which is still going on and a great show. You can catch it on iTunes if you've missed earlier episodes, or go to twit.tv/GTT and then go to ecoimagination.com and meet the winners and their great ideas. Thank you, GE, for putting together such a great program and putting together so much money, $200 million towards this good cause. Ecoimagination.com/challenge. We thank GE for their support of this show and Green Tech Today. Time for Gina's tip of the week.
AirSync.
Oh, you're doing it.
I'm doing it. AirSync. So if you've got an Android phone and you use DoubleTwist, which is the free kind of iTunes for Android software, doubletwist.com, there's a brand new feature called AirSync, which will let you wirelessly sync your playlists, videos, and photos to your Android device over Wi-Fi. So, you know, like I'm trained now with Android. Everything's, I never have to connect my Android phone to my computer, right? All my contacts, all my mail, everything gets, you know, it's just there on the phone, which is best part about Android. the only time you really did have to connect the phone to your computer is to sync, you know, to sync media. And now with DoubleTwist with AirSync, you can do it, you know, wirelessly.
Is it over? It's over Wi-Fi. You both have to be on the same network, I would
guess.
Yeah,
it's over Wi-Fi. So you have to install the DoubleTwist software on your desktop, which I already had because I was using it.
Me too.
And then you install. You have to get the update for the DoubleTwist app on your Android device, and it just says set up AirSync. If the two devices are on the same network, Wi-Fi network, it syncs your playlists, videos, and photos. It's awesome. So great. When you want to refresh your workout playlist or, you know, get more songs on the go, you don't have to break out that USB cable, which is so, so good. Much better.
Yay, AirSync.
Yay, AirSync. And it worked really well. I set it up literally during the time that we were setting up Twig.
Yeah, neat. Well, that's like an hour and a half, but still impressive. Thank you, Gina. Our number of the week for Mr. Jay Jarvis.
Thank you for generously not stepping on it. I didn't see
it. I have no idea what it was.
I know you don't. And the line that you weren't going to say was that iPhones are from Mars and Androids from Venus.
Or the other way around, actually.
Is it?
Oh, yeah, because men use Android.
Mars, oh, right. Oh, Jesus. Go ahead, take my number.
Get back in your cave. I don't know what the number is.
So men are 32.6% of men want an Android versus 28% want an iPhone. For women, it's the reverse.
Well, that's obvious.
9% want an iPhone and 22.8% want an iPhone and 22.8% want an Android. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
The iPhone is for girly men.
Mm-hmm. Also,
that's
for
obviously
old
the
girly
conclusion.
Men.
Yeah, it's for girly men. You are girly men. You have an iPhone. Oh, I hope you enjoy it. Do you have a beautiful bamboo case for it?
But when size matters, my Android is bigger than your Android.
That's a good point. You got a giant. You got a giant one there.
You know, just a point about this. It's all about the marketing, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the iPhone commercials are like one woman showing off boots that she just, you know, bought to her girlfriend over FaceTime. And the Droid commercials are like this robot mom, like power and all.
I hate those Droid commercials. I hate them.
I know.
But that Google has no control over that because that's Motorola and Verizon. It has nothing to do with Google.
Well, and it also certainly shows that the Pad brand didn't matter at all.
Right. Yeah, because they don't do anything for that.
I'm saying is the women would react badly to Pad.
Oh. Oh, interesting.
It's forgotten.
Right.
That's the amazing thing about brands, right? Yeah. Any company's brands, people just suffer over them.
It doesn't matter, does it?
I didn't know how to pronounce Verizon for 2 years.
Yeah.
And at some point, it doesn't matter.
Right.
It's the brand.
Because it gets in your head.
Yeah.
My tip is actually for Mac users who use Gmail. It is a new Mac email client that's designed for Gmail, although they say that eventually it will support other IMAP servers. But it is a very elegant way to – I actually replaced Apple Mail now because all of my mail is on Gmail. It's called Sparrow, and it's currently in beta, so it's free. Beta 6 just came out, sparrowmailapp.com. And actually, let me bring it back. For one thing, it really works well on the air. You can hide the dock icon and just have a menu icon. It's very clean. If I open the display, you can see it kind of looks more like a traditional mail. It does support labels, so I can see all my Gmail labels in here. It does a great job. I have multiple Gmail accounts. Here's my regular Gmail account. Here's my Google Apps Gmail account. Very simple to respond back.
Is priority yet?
You know, I guess it. Well, Gina, is priority a label? It should if it's a label, right?
It's a reserved label.
Let me see.
Yeah, I think it's important or something like that.
It's important. Yeah.
So let me see if I see important. No, see, I profile message. No, I don't see it. So I guess, but I'm sure, you know, this is in rapid upgrade mode. It doesn't do one thing that I really like, which is the ability to use PGP or SMIME to sign mail. I do like to sign all my mail. But it does support archiving. It does support deleting as well. It is just a very quick and elegant way of doing your email if you're a Gmail user. And, you know, you've got stars. You've got sent mail. You've got all the labels here. I've got drafts and my trash can. And when you close the preview window, it's just a little thing sitting right there. Really nice in the MacBook Air where it doesn't take up a lot of room. That's called Sparrow. It is free right now. I imagine they're going to charge for it down the road. But the beta is free. Sparrow, mailapp.com. Mac users only, but I know a lot of Gmail users use Macs as well. Hey, that's it for this week in Google. Matt, so much fun to have you on. Anytime you want to come by, we'd love having you. Yep.
It was a true pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
MattCutts.com, MattCutts.com/blog. Jeff Jarvis.
Man who improves the internet every day.
Yes, we can thank Matt for his good work at Google, keeping spam results out of our search.
His work is never done.
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, and luckily I have a huge team that helps.
Oh,
so.
Good. All right. It's not all you?
No. I don't speak enough languages, for one thing.
Well, that's a good point. Yeah.
Wait, Matt, I do have a serious question. I do have a serious, because I say all the time that I would think that you would be the most unpleasant guy in the worst mood on earth dealing with the scum.
Spam, I hate it.
Why are you one of the nicest people I know? How do you do that in your head? I'm serious. Yeah, how do you do that?
He's so sunny, I know.
Well, I have gotten a little more of a thick skin over the years. People can call me a lot of stuff, and I'm like, that's not the worst thing I've been called.
That always helps.
Do spammers actually call you?
Oh, sure. I've got, people. Wow. Yeah, they get frustrated, the occasional death threat, stuff like that. But it's pretty rare.
Do they have Russian or Nigerian accents?
Yeah, it varies. It varies.
Jeff Jarvis is at buzzmachine.com. That's his blog. His book is What Would Google Do? Soon to be public parts any day now.
And the next book will be How to Have a Pink Face.
You're good at it. You got it. You've mastered it. He's also a professor of journalism at the City University of New York. We love having him on the show. And the wonderful Gina Trapani, who is at buzzmachine.com. And
Smarterware.
I'm sorry, smarterware.org.
I would like to have Verge. That'd be good.
Smarterware.org. And you're going full-time at Think Tank now.
Yeah, well, I've been full-time leading ThinkUp development for a while now, but yeah, I'm not I'm kind of cutting down on some of my freelance stuff, and I'm going to go kind of dive into coding more, which I'm really excited
That's
about.
Fun.
But I will be working, we're doing a new edition of the Lifehacker book, so I am going to be working with Adam Pasch on that one next year, which
awesome.
Will be fun. And also, one thing that we didn't mention today, there's an official Google Reader app out for Android. So search for Reader on the market.
It's brand new.
I've been waiting for that.
Yeah.
I should have mentioned that as my tool. I'll have to download that right away.
Yeah.
You can use.
I'm getting my nice big thing where I'm going to play.
That's made for Google Reader.
Good on the
That's
tab.
Made for Google Reader, isn't it? What were you saying then, Matt?
Oh, yeah. You can use the volume knob to go scroll through screen through items.
See, Apple wouldn't let you do that. Yeah, you get knocked out of the market for that. ThinkUp is the place to go to learn more about ThinkUp. ThinkUp.app.com, I should say. And you can now download it and put it on your web server if you've got PHP and MySQL.
Yep.
Very cool. Thank you, Gina. Thank you, Jeff.
Gina, hold on one question. Quick. I don't find it. What do I search for?
Reader.
Reader. Just Reader.
Just Reader. Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Now you can say goodbye, Leo.
Thank you, everybody. We'll see you next time. I'm not going to be here next week. I'm at Le Web in Paris. Jeff, are you going to host? I think you're going to host, aren't you?
Am I all good? Yeah.
We'll put you in charge. Whatever. Or maybe, I don't know, maybe Tom Merritt will sit here in the studio just to keep you company.
It's egalitarian, this show.
It is. There really isn't a host.
Right.
Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google. Bye-bye.